This is Reel 6. Last time we were talking, you mentioned your move to Shiloh, was it? Shiloh, the village. And then you moved back to Osvosk. Yes, this, of course, would have been after the Russians had arrived.
I want to talk about something that still happened in the ghetto.
Yes, I wanted to go back to the ghetto at some time, but shall we leave the ghetto for the time being and carry on with your story? Because I've got a lot of questions to ask you about the ghetto. Is that okay, Mr.
Yes.
Parker? Because when you moved back to Otwosk, this would have been... Would it have been when the war had ended in Europe?
The war had ended, yes. The war had ended. You stayed there. I paid him 7,500 zloty. And when the war ended, he took 500 zloty. It was enough.
This was with the same Jaworski, wasn't it?
Same flat.
Same flat, yes.
And I couldn't go out with my wife together, for she was not a Christian. And if she went out with me, and I was not Jewish, would have said she was a Jewish.
Why were you worried about that, now that the war was over?
Jaworski was afraid of that his neighbors will be with prostitutes, but he gave hiding to a Jew, shelter to a Jew. So he told us, to me, my brother-in-law, to take two empty suitcases, jump over the garden fence, and bring back some piece of paper written by myself that the town, nobody was going to check it, that the town sends me and him, my brother-in-law, for him to save him, allocated after his house. They had to prove for his neighbors that he didn't take us willingly after the war.
This implies that although the Jews had been through so much, that the Polish people were not sympathetic.
They were hated. They hated us. For no good reason. I haven't never seen the people before. They never saw me. Why should they hate us? The Jew was poisoned. I was friendly with Jaworski. We were good friends. I never quarreled, not once. I paid the man on time, and he was more careful than his wife, but nevertheless, it was stupid to put on the pyjama and go to church. A blue pyjama and long boots.
Your money, had it lasted right through the war?
Well, if the war lasted another 2 months, I wouldn't have any more money. 2 months, say 3 months, I wouldn't have any more money. Because we sold everything, the gold, and it came to, we left with a few gold chains. The gold was not the quality as here. It was 14 carat. He is 9 or 18. And there is 14 carats in Poland. So all this gold was bought from us by Mr. Jaworski.
So did this mean you had to look for work? Were you sort of looking for a job?
Yes. When I came out, I didn't have any, I was there, no money and nothing what to do. So I saw it happened that I told you later, earlier, that we found two people, my friend and another, a Jew and his wife and two daughters, on the marketplace and brought them to us. And he was, before the war, dealing in buying forests and cutting them down and selling timber. Name is very difficult to pronounce. Anyhow, Mr. Pizis was his name. Mr. Pizis, P-I-Z-Y-S. pieces. So Mr. Pujols one day was traveling. Not traveling normally, just on a soldier's lorry, carrying ammunition to the front, or carrying back from the front. And he finished up in a place unknown to him. He went to the house because it was raining, sunk in the frame of the wooden door, and somebody came out and said, "Come inside, why should you stay there?" Polish people, of course. Then he heard that they were making boxes. There was a shortage in Poland of boxes for ointments. And these were made from the same material as for matchboxes. The same material. They made boxes. And that was belonged to the Jews before the war. And the people who were living in this house were working for the Jews before the war. And say they took the house and got the factory as well. And they made things that know what to do with him. So Mr. Pilgrim asked for samples, and I invented it to straight away, but later went to nearest big town, 100 kilometers away from us. Lublin is the town. And went to a few chemists and showed them these samples. "Oh, yes, we wrapped the ointment in paper and got anything to buy. So we went there later with his recommendation to those people. And got 8-10 cases full of these boxes because they're empty. And they're empty, light boxes, but bulky. So put them into cases and went by a hired peasant's cart, horse and cart. And it was running at that speed I could follow on foot. Especially winter time, when it was cold, prefer to walk. And the journey usually took 2-3 days to get 100 kilometers. And we went first time to the town, Lublin, and we sold all the things. We earned 40% profit. And we shared it out. My brother of one part, Mr. Pidgett's one part. And this was gone, this business, for about half a year. And to other places as well, selling it because they needed it. This was creator couldn't live anymore otherwise, they had no money. And then that same period, when the American Joint Distribution Committee opened a branch in Warsaw again, and his wife's brother-in-law, or something like that, became one of the directors here. He was a communist, and any business created that time must have one communist of these said director. I was not a communist. So he helped me. There was a hotel Polonia in Warsaw near the opposite the station, a railway station. And I went to him for an interview. And he asked me, "What have I done before, and my experience, etc., etc." And he gave me a letter to recommendation to the mayor of the town, of the port of Gdynia. Gdynia, Din as written G-D-Y-N-I-A. And I recommended the accommodation for him to allow me to do what I have to do, to hire board warehouses near the sea. And they receive goods coming from all over the world with the ships of UNRWA. UNRWA, you heard about the UNRWA during the war. The UNRWA was sending goods all over the world for people, not for Jews, but for others. Agreed to accept our goods as well. The warehouse was four floors. And they started, I started receiving. I had difficulty getting a flat. Looked at me, didn't give me the flat. I stayed 6 months with all my people, there were four people in a hotel.
Was that again because of anti-Semitism?
They looked at my face, didn't give me a flat. So 6 months we stayed up. My wife wrote letters, look, I live alone in this little place there. Winter, I can't go out at night and so on. Take me, bring me there. Where could I take it? So, I begged the directors to help me. The mount directors came to Gdynia. He talked with the Lord Mayor of Gdynia. It didn't help. Didn't get the help. But eventually I came across a Jewish lady who was selling her flat. Her husband perished during the war, and she wanted to go to Israel. So he said, can you buy it for me? For me? I said, yes. She wanted 100,000 zloty. And in addition, she gave me a carpet. And I sent the carpet by the next lorry going to London. And when they received it, they said that the carpet alone was worth 100,000 zloty. Because they had a boarding room, a board for the board for the officer directors, and they couldn't have a carpet. It just fit it right. So we got the house for nothing. It was 3 or 4 rooms and a kitchen, but full of, I don't know how you call it in English, stinking. Under the wallpaper.
Oh yes, the damp, the rising damp.
No, worm, little sucking.
Oh yes, woodworm.
They just, you don't know here, they don't exist here. I've never seen it, and I've come across one, but they existed in Germany. In Poland, the house wasn't clean. And the beds are full of these things. Under wallpapers as well.
Would that be lice, fleas?
Not lice. Mm. I have a Polish book upstairs, I must go with a dictionary to find out. Polish, I don't know how the name is. Anyhow. We didn't want to decorate it. I could decorate it. I could ask it. But I intended to go away to America, to England. I got in the meeting in correspondence with my brother-in-law. I wrote a letter to Dr. Robert and so on. They sent to the university. I didn't know where he was, but that the university got the letter and sent it, gave it away to my brother-in-law. Since then, we're in correspondence with him, and he sent papers for my sister-in-law, and because she was going to have a baby. She wanted the baby to be born in England. So they left about 4 months before me, and she came to England. She had the baby 2 weeks later.
Did you want to leave Poland?
Yes. I swore I'd never come back.
Why was that?
Because I hated the country after what they did to They pointed out Jude Jude. Nobody, no German knew. I was working with my brother-in-law near the railway station. And my brother-in-law who survived the war. And he also wore the same band as I wore. But a Polish boy, the Germans were passing by, said, pointed out, Jude, Jude. And they took him away from me. And they didn't take me because evidently they didn't think I looked like a Jew. He was working later for one day on the railway station, helping to discharge some coal or something. He came home in the evening, did nothing to him. Otherwise they wouldn't know, the neighbors wouldn't know. He just passing by opposite was the railway station, passing by there. Mm. Yes. And the Germans were going around, probably searching for Jews to help him discharge the coal. Why anybody else? Who can do it? Jew.
Do you know, have you any idea, you know, how many Poles helped Jews, you know, to hide them without money, out of the sort of...
I have no idea.
Do you think that happened?
Only Mr. Pugets, maybe. Mr. Pugets. I said, mentioned you, because he and his wife and daughters didn't have any means. But I heard later that a German from the factories where we were working there helped him with money. He spoke Polish as well, didn't want anybody to know. He knew Polish, he spoke Polish. And he helped him with money. Also from the American Joint Distribution Committee, the director helped. A little bit of money got from America and helped.
Mm. Yes, I was thinking, you know, in the war with the Polish people, you know, whether the record was all black, you know, the fact that, as you say, they were very anti-Semitic.
Anything you said that this belongs to the Jew, take it away. Everything what Jews did was wrong. If they said something was wrong, oh, it's just about a Jewish work. It wasn't even Jewish. Our luck was, my wife looked Christian, blonde, and she had a strong character, weak body, but a strong character. And she didn't give her herself away. Went to the shops, brought goods for us, and she had there's one shop near us was a shop there. She was friendly with the lady of the shop. And I told you once about the Germans came to our house on the
Yes, you have actually explained that.
The same day my wife was in that shop when the Germans came in. And she was laughing. Why was she laughing? Because the owner of the shop, a lady owner of the shop, told her a few minutes earlier, a few seconds earlier, this is a shelter I keep a few Jews hiding in my house. My father looked at the hiding place, was just curtains, and that's all. My wife was laughing. She couldn't stop laughing. And inside came a German. He saw she was laughing at, smiling at him. And he came inside, and then a few minutes later came the officer, he said, the German said, everything is in order. Later he told my wife, I bless you, you saved me, you saved the whole house.
So the Poles who helped the Jews, would they have done it just for what they could get, the money?
Money for the money. I've never heard of anybody saving Jews without money. Only those who could pay.
How were the Poles treated by the Germans? Did you have any evidence of...
No mercy for them either. They snatched all the young boys, young men in the streets, wherever they could, and sent them away to Germany to work. And the Germans couldn't distinguish who was a Jew and who was not. But not all Jews look like Jews. My brothers-in-law, Professor Roblat, and his two brothers, didn't look Jewish at all. He was blonde, high, tall. And thank God he was abroad.
Yes.
He, my younger brother, the one who survived with us, looked a Christian, but he couldn't speak Polish properly. My father-in-law realized he was not going to be a man who would learn in school. He sent him to be a sewing machine mechanic.
Yes, you did explain that, Mr. Parker. Yes. So you know, obviously the appearance was going to be very important from what you say. The other thing I was going to ask you, Professor Rotblat, you know, his wife, unfortunately, was left behind. Did you have any idea in the war what was happening to her?
And I came back from... I came back on the 29th of September, after the war, the Germans conquered Poland. That same day came my sister-in-law, Professor Rodler's wife. And we had brought with us two black breads, this diameter. Polish peasants bake such breads. And they were excellent black bread that was sweet and nice. And of course, they gave her part of this bread. She said that when I left home, I knew that something good would happen to me. I didn't know why. I had a premonition that something good would happen to me. And she came half an hour after we arrived. And I begged her to stay with us. She lived a long way from us. In Warsaw, a long way from us. The professor begged her in August to go with him to America. He was sent for this purpose by the professor in Liverpool. And she said, no, she doesn't speak English, hasn't got any friends, doesn't know anybody. And she perished. I telephoned one day to Lublin, to the Jewish, a society taking care of all the necessary affairs, of a committee. No? And I told the name of my sister-in-law. He said, man, what don't you hear shout? Listen, don't well, unless it had shots. I am under the table, he says. And I can't, my sister-in-law lived opposite that institution. I can't even go out of the house because the shooting, it was a day of starching Jews and they came away. And my sister-in-law was taken with her mother. Her father was taken three days. I was there till about the 27th of September. And he probably was arrested by the Germans a few days later. And 2 weeks later, they sent back his what it was wearing.
So what happened to the wife?
She and my sister-in-law decided to work in a hospital. It was a Jewish hospital there. Helped these people there.
And whereabouts was that?
In Lublin.
In Lublin, yes.
In Lublin. And they were taken away with everybody else.
And where were they sent?
Belzec, a concentration camp. Can you read German? No. Can you read German? I can bring it down some book later. Polish and German. But the German you can read if you know it. In Germany.
Yes, I just wondered what happened to her and if you had
they
heard.
They were in the concentration camp. Belzec, I believe, in Belzec. It was such a concentration camp. And they perished.
Did you know about that? Did you know that they had perished?
No. But soon afterwards, I heard that all the people in Lublin were taken away and sent away to Belzec.
Yeah. Out of your whole family in Poland, how many survived? No, how many did not?
only myself, only our family. Our
my wife, my
daughter, my mother-in-law, my sister and brother-in-law. I have two uncles, each had four children. I have pictures there. I have even pictures of our landlord's house where we were hidden. I can show this to you. And also a picture of him, him and his wife.
But what was the sort of survival rate of your family?
My family, we survived. I lost, I said, two uncles, and each of them had a wife and four children. One lived in London, in Warsaw. He was a baker. And the other was had a shop, various things, a shop in a village, in a small town, you have to have everything, you see, to sell this and that. He was coming frequently to Warsaw to buy various things from the wholesalers and take it there and sold it there. And he was living in a sort of a corner shop with his wife and had also four children.
But what do you think are the reasons for surviving something like the Holocaust in Poland, and particularly the ghetto, the fact that you were in the Warsaw ghetto? When you look back and you think about it, what do you think were the main reasons for the survival of your family?
We had the common sense and money and opportunity. There was a lot of people, my friends, very rich people, who were supposedly working, they were not working there, but they were playing cards and all sorts of things. They were in this company at Schillings. A lot of people, they all perished. And I know about one of them. He had a house and not far from us in Solna 16, Solna Street number 16. And he contacted later Mr. Ijikowski and asked him to manage somehow to give him. Somebody brought Mr. Ijikowski a golden chain, a lady's chain, a golden back, lady's back. He was already in a camp. He could free himself. So he said, if he could sell this bag, golden bag, and send the money, give the money to somebody who would bring it to the concentration camp, he wouldn't go. And one day, Mr. Jukowski comes to me. This was later when the ghetto was already completely destroyed. Mr. Jukowski came to my wife every 2 weeks last. And one week, the other week, he was going to his wife. He was living in such a dacha somewhere. And he told us this story. He was going on the main street of Warsaw, Marszałkowska Street. And he was carrying this bag in a leather briefcase. And a German passed by and called him into some gate of a house. Because the houses had big gates there in Warsaw. And looked into the bag and took away the gold. I tell you, it was an invented story. It was an invented story. My wife and I didn't believe in this. He pretended the gold was taken away from her by Germany. And he paid with his life for it later. Punishment. Which I want to tell you later. Because before, I'll tell you now. Before, 2 weeks before the Russians came, about 3 weeks, Ijikowski came to visit my wife and was sitting on his knees. I came out of the shelter on the steps. I was already in the shelter. And I told him, look, Mr. Ijikowski, there's going to be a battle on for the Russians to cross the Vistula, because the Russians are approaching. The Vistula is a very wide river, 3 times as wide as the Thames. And there will be a battle. And Warsaw may be destroyed. Don't go to Warsaw. Go to your wife. Stay there. begged him. I swear to God Almighty, I begged him. Don't go or take here a room and stay here. No, that's what happened to him. He was wearing a leather mantle, like the Germans. He had a briefcase in hand. He was blonde, Aryan. And he said, no, I have something to do in war. For heaven's sake, this will be a question of your life. Don't go to war. I will stay in war, I must. A few weeks later, the Poles started an uprising in 1944. And the Germans called back the army. And they killed 250,000 Poles. And Mr. Jakowski was taking, they said, called everybody in the houses to come down. And he came down like everybody else, because to find him in the house, they were shooting. He came downstairs, he saw that as a support, he was safe.